It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Across the country, there seems to be a war against law enforcement personnel. In many cities, we find that the mayors, as well as in some cases, even the police chiefs themselves, are not supporting the officers who serve under them. The situation is particularly critical when it comes to the relationship between police officers and the minority communities around the country. We know that with organizations like Black Lives Matter, there is a sense that of a war between the police and the community. Yet we know that without law enforcement, we have a state of nature. We will have chaos. We need our public safety officers. We need them to be respected and well paid. So joining me today is Lieutenant Randy Sutton. And Mr. Sutton is a nationally known expert and commentator on law enforcement issues. And he's been featured all around on Fox and Friends, One America News, KTNV TV Las Vegas, numerous places. And he's also has a show on the America Out Loud Network. He has founded a new organization called The Wounded Blue. We'll talk about that organization later. But first, I'd like to hear Lieutenant Randy Sutton's views about law enforcement in America more generally. Randy, welcome to the Be the People show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Carol.
So, Randy, what are we going to do about the situation that you see across America, certainly in my city of Nashville, where there seems to be a general disrespect of the police and all sorts of issues when it comes to their working conditions?
Well, there are issues all over the country. First, let's talk about the landscape of law enforcement for a moment. There are 18,000 different police agencies in this country. Each one of those agencies is run by a chief or a sheriff. Each one of those agencies has their own training rules, their own regulations. Out of those 18,000 different agencies, 80% of them have less than 20 officers. Now, when you have that much disparity between agencies, then you have a lack of conformity and unity in many areas. When you get to a lot of urban areas, there are issues involved with perception of divide between the communities and the police, and many times these are exaggerated, and other times they are legitimate. Police agencies do their best in most areas to try and bridge that gap. Sometimes they fall short, and sometimes the communities themselves refuse to get involved in bridging the gap, and so you have a lot of divide.
Okay, well, let me ask you this: you said that the average law enforcement crew or force is 20 officers.
No, out of 18,000 different police agencies in this country, 80% of them have less than 20 police officers.
I had no idea that there would be so few, but it depends on the size of the geographical area, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. These, you know, there are lots of rural communities, small communities. For instance, when I was first hired as a police officer in New Jersey, I worked in a small community, and we had 30 police officers. In the county that I was in, There were more than 26 different police agencies in the county. And so, you know, what happens is you're literally only divided by a street between your agency and the next agency. But there's different leaders. There's different styles of leadership. There are different rules, different everything is different. And so, you know, it's one of those things that every community wants to have its own law enforcement, but there is a an inefficiency that takes place that I think this has never been really addressed.
Now, where were you on the force in New Jersey? I used to live in Princeton.
Well, that's where I was a policeman. I was a policeman in Princeton.
During which years?
1976 to 1986. I was a Princeton borough cop.
Okay, I was on the faculty there from 1990 to 2000.
Well, I just missed you.
Well, I mean, I had actually problems with the borough police. I moved there with two teenage sons, and you may recall during those years, it was a pretty lily-white community. So I had the experience of my sons being followed, you know, from school, and at first they were reporting to me that people were following them, and I thought they were paranoid. But it turned out the campus police and also the borough police, they were very concerned about crime coming from Trenton, and they had memorized the faces of the blacks pretty much that belonged in Princeton. And so I had that experience.
You know, that's interesting because when I was a police officer there, as you said, the people that lived there, it was a predominantly white area. There was a substantial black population in Princeton Borough itself.
But the officers knew who they were.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, so we moved in from the south, and, you know, we were strangers to the community, and it took a while, you know, to address that. But I myself experienced, you know, the racial profiling of having two teenage sons living in a community like that. But I handled it by teaching my sons to be respectful to the police, but also protested, and eventually there was some sensitivity training that took place because the Princeton community was becoming more diverse, and you could no longer just memorize the faces of who belonged in town.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because when I first joined the police department in 1976, policing was very different than it is today. And I saw a huge change in attitudes, in the way that people dealt with the community. You know, there's no doubt that there was in 1976, there was much more racial bias that I watched during my 34-year police career change radically from a higher degree of racial bias to what I saw at the end of my career after 34 years was almost no racial bias in the agencies that I worked at. I mean, it was really astounding that there was such a sea change in the way people viewed others. And I think that's probably, you know, one of the things that professionalism and just societal attitude brought forth.
Well, the other thing I think is true, too, is that I can say that I never experienced any type of bias living in the Northeast. I got my first ticket, though, when I moved to Nashville, the first one in my whole life, the first summer that I was in Nashville. But I think that when it's youth, that, you know, police officers look at them more closely, and it doesn't matter their race, you know, if they are young and they seem to be, you know, somewhere that they don't expect them to be.
Well, if you look at the statistics of the people who are committing criminal activities, especially activities like burglaries and things like that, you will find that it's generally people between the ages of 16 and 23.
That's right.
So, if you're a police officer, and you're looking at the reports, because briefings take place in every police agency about crime trends and about what neighborhoods are being victimized, is there a description of the suspect, and so they're looking for people of that are in that general gender and race,
right,
of the descriptions of the people who are committing the crime. So of course that's just it's just good policing, actually.
Now we're going to take a brief break.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers. I'm back with Lieutenant Randy Sutton, and he is a nationally renowned law enforcement expert, and we're just talking about law enforcement in America more generally. And so, Randy, I took you off in another direction, sharing my Princeton story, but you were talking about policing and how it's changed, and I'm really concerned about how we can bring communities together and how we can have a strong police force.
Well, this is the $64,000 question, Carol. I personally believe that the leadership of law enforcement agencies is paramount when it comes down to creating an environment of good policing.
Yes.
Law enforcement officers themselves are committed to doing what they have gotten, what they hired on to do, and that's fight crime. There are so many demands placed on these men and women that have essentially nothing to do with the law enforcement mission. They're expected to be social workers in many cases. They are expected to comport themselves in ways that are almost unaccepted in that they are confronted with people that in this day and age are actually targeting them.
I know.
In order to force a confrontation so that people can get, 15 minutes of social media fame, or that they can try and manipulate law enforcement into acting in certain ways to push forth a social agenda or a political agenda. Then you have politicians, and I mean to tell you, this whole political environment, from small towns to big cities, where you have elected officials who are really not concerned with their communities. What they're really concerned with is their own political careers, and so the police are basically low hanging fruit when it comes down to, these agendas.
I agree.
And so what happens is the leadership of law enforcement agencies turns into a political issue or a political victim sometimes, because, the mayor and council can fire a police chief literally at the drop of a hat.
I know. And
if they don't toe the political line, then what happens? Well, they, you know, I think the last time I read, the average police chief in America had a shelf life of about 2.5 years. So, you know, you have people that say, you know what, why would I want to be a police chief? You know, people that are really, that would be very, very good leaders, but they say, you know what, I don't want to get involved in this. And so you have other people that, unfortunately, take the job for the wrong reasons because of a thirst for power, and then they kowtow to the politicians, thereby leaving the morale of the police agency in the toilet.
I was shocked, you know, to learn that the police chief, you know, serves at the pleasure of the mayor, but that police officers, at least in Nashville, they don't get real input into the selection of a new chief. And so really, you're right that the police chiefs they hire, the ones that stay the longest, are the ones that do whatever they're told to do by the mayor.
Exactly. You hit it right on the head. So, you know, there's two kinds of major law enforcement officers or law enforcement in this country. There are municipal and city police agencies. Those are usually run by chiefs. And then there are the county agencies, the sheriff's departments, who are run by elected officials. Now, I've had the experience of working in both. My first 10 years there was a chief of police. And then my second part of my career was 24 years. I worked for an elected sheriff. And what I found was that sheriffs have a little more autonomy. That is, that they only answer every 4 years. They can't be fired unless they do something so egregious, you know, it borders on criminal. So you have sheriffs that can more or less stand up to other local politicians because they are in a position where they cannot get fired. So it's one of those things that it's an interesting dichotomy when you look at the difference in the law enforcement leadership.
Now, Randy, have you followed the situation in Nashville involving a young man, Officer Delkey? He shot a black man that was running away who was also 25 years old. They were both 25 years old. He shot him in the back. The guy that was shot had a loaded gun in his hands, and he also had a criminal record. Well, that officer has been charged with first-degree murder, even though he was on the job at the time. And he said it looked as if the person he shot was turning towards him. But I think it's one of the first times, certainly in Nashville, that an officer was charged with murder while on the job in circumstances like that.
Well, this is a travesty. I have been following this. I've been writing about it. I've been discussing it on my radio show and my television show both. What we're seeing in various parts of the country, and Nashville is one of them, you have a district attorney named Funk.
Yes.
Who is more of a political activist than he is a prosecutor. For him to charge this officer with murder is absolutely an outrage. The reality is this, that the law is very clear when it comes down to the decision-making of deadly force. And that is that individual, is the police officer acting reasonably? Would a reasonable person, would a reasonable officer feel the threat? And you don't have to have a gun pointed at you, which seems to be what the narrative is that is being put out there by people like Funk. The fact that this suspect had a gun in his hand automatically makes him a deadly threat. The fact that you can articulate as a law enforcement officer why he is a threat, the fact that he is running down the street with a gun, that he is literally a threat to every single person that is in that area, And if that officer saw or believed he saw that the individual turned towards him, threatening him with that gun, that's even clearer reasonableness. So the fact that that this officer is being charged with murder, I'll tell you right now, unless the jury is completely biased against him, he's not going to be found guilty.
I know.
This is not murder. This is not murder. This is nowhere near murder. And one of the reasons that the National Police Department's morale is in the toilet is because of Funk, and also because the police chief there is become a political tool. And instead of fighting for this officer, he's basically acceded to the political environment. And that's why the National Police Officers Association and the National Police are so angry.
Well, what bothers me is that Glenn Funk, the prosecutor, compared the officer's defense to the Nuremberg defense. And I wrote an opinion piece about that. But he made the comparison to the officer following police procedure as comparable to Nuremberg.
Yeah, when I talk about activist prosecutors, this is a phenomenon that began in Baltimore when Marilyn Mosby stood up and made a political speech and then charged six police officers with the murder of Freddie Gray, which clearly was not a murder either. But she began a certain trend, and many of these prosecutors now, district attorneys, are being elected with huge cash infusions by agenda-driven political opportunists, people like George Soros,
right,
who are funding millions and millions of dollars. The job of a prosecutor or a district attorney is to be basically the chief law enforcement officer in that county. The district attorneys have a tremendous amount of power, and they are the ones who are charged with basically protecting the people of that county by working with law enforcement to prosecute criminals.
Yes.
Well, what's happening is they are making political decisions based on their own social agendas.
Right.
For instance, you have a number of prosecutors now saying, we're just not going to enforce certain laws that we don't like.
Well, you know, it's Marxism that's taken over our country, and their goal is to get rid of the police altogether. And what I believe will happen in Nashville is that Officer Dilkey will be acquitted, and then there will be riots in the black community because they'll say another white police officer got off. Another white police officer got off.
I think that is probably a pretty legitimate forecast that you just made. And the really sad part here, Carol, is that those protests and riots will be manipulated by the Glenn Funks of the world, by the media that is certainly biased against law enforcement, and by political opportunists who will use this for their own personal gain or political gain by creating this fiction of the racist police hunting down young black men.
Right.
And this is so damaging. And yet you see this playing out over and over again.
Now, Randy, we have to take a break. And when I return, I want you to tell our listeners about the Wounded Blue.
There are speakers, and then there are great speakers who know the importance of creating that memorable moment. Well, the key to any successful event is an informative and inspirational speaker. Professor Dr. Carol Swain is that gifted speaker. She delivers passionately from the heart every time. To find out more about booking Carol for your next great event, simply go to carolmswain.com. Click on Public Speaking and then click the blue Book Carol tab.
I'm back with my guest, Lieutenant Randy Sutton, and we're talking about all sorts of important issues that relate to law enforcement. Randy has started an organization that I know you all want to hear about. So, Randy, tell us about the Wounded Blue.
The Wounded Blue is the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers. And quite honestly, Carol, this is not an organization that I ever thought would be needed in this country. Most people, in fact, most cops even, believe that if you get shot, stabbed, run over by a car, beaten, and you are seriously injured or disabled, you're going to receive adequate medical care, and you're going to be taken care of financially. And the reality is far different in many, many areas of this country. I can't tell you the number of law enforcement officers that have contacted me over the last couple of years with absolutely heart-rending tales of how they are abandoned by their own agencies once they become severely injured or disabled. I'll give you one example, which is absolutely shocking. That's a police lieutenant who was involved in a pursuit, did not know that the people he was chasing were hired killers, mm-hmm. heavily armed. On video, he is shot in the head during the pursuit. He is severely injured, and his police agency, city, did not even give him the proper medical care. They didn't pay his medical bills for a year and a half, forcing him into financial ruin. A court finally ordered them to pay his medical bills, and now, right now today, this happened 2 years ago, he's living on $375 a week, and they're trying to take that away from him.
That's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace, and the American public is unaware of it, and very often, even law enforcement agencies themselves, the police officers themselves, just expect that they're going to be treated humanely, and it isn't happening. So we created this organization to be the advocate for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. Our motto is never forgotten, never alone.
Tell our listeners how they can contact you and also learn more about the organization.
Our website is thewoundedblue.org. Make sure you put in the. It's thewoundedblue.org. We also have a GoFundMe account set up right now. We're trying to raise money for our official launch, which is going to be in May during Police Week. But we already have a national peer support organization in place helping law enforcement officers right now cope with this with their injuries and disabling injuries.
Well, Randy, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. And I certainly want to have you back on the show because there's so much happening with law enforcement just across the country. And we appreciate you and the service that you have given our country and what you're doing with the Wounded Blue.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And, Carol, one thing you can rest assured is that the men and women of law enforcement truly believe in service to their communities, and they go out there every single day and fight for the people that they serve.
Thank you so much. We the people need our law enforcement officers, and it's so important to support people like Lieutenant Randy Sutton and the work he's doing with the Wounded Blue. So I really urge you all to be the people who support organizations that undergird our community, and certainly law enforcement agencies around the country undergird our communities. So go out there and be the people who change America and our world.